And so here we have tonight day two of our community discussion, and we've invited Noel Alexander to join us from the Jamaican Association, as well as Michael Giddens from the Côte d'Ivoire Black Community Association. And so we've invited this discussion today to talk about specifically the police, youth, and the business community, because of things that have happened in our community that the police have never been held accountable for. For example, what happened at King Cuts on December 12, 2001. There was a raid on this business, and it was commenced on the pretense of a drug raid. There were no drugs found, there were no arrests made, but there were people deported. It wasn't given media attention, and the police were never held accountable for it in terms of the right kinds of questions being asked, like why were the police working alongside of immigration officers? So that sort of initiated this need to have these sorts of discussions within the community, which is why we're doing these panel discussions and why we've invited you here. And so that's what I hope to begin with tonight, is your assessment of where police relations are within the Black community, specifically in Montreal, but between youth, police, and the business community.
But it's not only King Cuts that something took place. At Sunjet Travel, there was also the incident where the police went into this travel agency, a group of police, and I understand they really roughed the people up and so on. And I went in to ask the people who own the business what happened. And they touched it a bit, but I don't know, fear of speaking. The fella next door, he had just started a hairdressing business. Oh, I forget his name now, and he's married, but he hasn't got his papers through as yet, and he was arrested, because when they asked him for his ghost, when they asked him for his papers, he didn't have it on him. Well, they took him in, and then when everything was sorted out, when he brought his papers forward, they let him go again. As I say, I went on the street and tried to inquire what is going on, and people were sort of forthcoming. So, you know, it seems to me that if something's happening to me, I should be able to talk about it. And it's being able to talk to my community. Listen to me, this is what took place, and what can we do about it? I'm prepared to go to the nth degree to get some kind of justice here. But I don't know. It would be better if they were here to speak on it. And other things, like I think Michael kind of myself, with regards to the relationship, the way we see the police behaving in Côte d'Ivoire, especially at this time, if we do an assessment of what we see take from 1991 to now, I would say that there's a fantastic improvement in many areas. We had a slight breakdown the past couple of years, but it seemed to pick up again because we told them, you know, in certain terms that we need to know the new police that come to the district. We need to see them behave in a certain way. I'm not accepting police walk into the district and start going back to where we were in 1991. We're not going to accept that. Stopping a young man and asking him where you get the scar from and effing and blinding at people. I heard that, those days are over. Don't let me hear it again, you know. We know we meet on a regular basis, on a monthly basis. We meet with the Station 24 director, Station 25 director, and now we have 24, 25, 26. We discuss Mandela Park. We discuss the facilities for people to have sports or recreation, because this is where Michael's... Michael Gittins from Maison de Jeune is also there, the Black Coalition and Dan Phillips. And we're not there begging a question. We're putting to them what we think is wrong and what needs to be put right. One of the things we hear from the police is that there's a high turnover of the police in the district, which means that, and they're young police officers, which means we get, the minute we start to tell these cops that this is not acceptable, they move on. We have a new crowd come again, and we have to go and tell them the same thing again. Hey, your behavior stinks. We won't accept it. You know what I mean? Stopping people, giving them ticket, jaywalk across the street. Give them a warning. I mean, what are you talking about? If you really want to arrest people jaywalking, go to St. Catherine Street. Man, you wouldn't have enough ticket to handle, like confetti. What are you doing up on Victoria with this nonsense? So, you know, we have to bring that to the table. So we are working, and Michael here is very voice the question of Mandela Park and the behavior, cop running with his gun out of his holster, kids in the park, suppose he fall down and the bloody gun go off, he could shoot somebody's kid. So, you know, we got after them. So don't think that cops in that district don't face our tongue. So it is not an easy ride for them. So I can tell you, every month we meet with them, and if anybody have anything on their mind to bring up, you let us know, because we will bring it up. And we are not talking to the guys in the street. We're talking to the boss and said, unacceptable. You have to behave a certain way. So for me, I think that there is a lot of movement and a lot of goodwill. And when I spoke to someone from the station, let me repeat, I think that the police, they're not social workers. They have a job to do. What we need to have is qualified social work. I don't care how they want to form it or fix it, but we need some more work done, because we have people with mental disorders. We have people who, for some reason or the other, having other problems. And these problems are played out in the street. And it's not a police problem. It's a social problem that have social implications and which needs to be answered in that area. So I'll stop there for now, but that is how I see this sort of situation.
Okay, if I could put the black community in Cornage and the relationship with the police into some kind of context, we have to go back a little bit to understand the role that the black community have played then and what role the black community is playing now. After the series of shooting in the 80s and early 90s, when a lot of people was angry, upset, they wanted to just do anything that is destructive because of their anger. The Jamaica Association, Noel, and myself, the Courtney Black Women Association, we went to the station 31, and we started working with the station and bringing the institution in the area. That decision was not very popular with most of our youths, because most of the youths felt that we should not be working with the police because of what is taking place of the shootings. But they say, but that would not fix the problem. So then we start and we set up an ad hoc committee that the police chaired that committee, and Jamaica Association, to Mr. Alexander, was there. I was there. Maison and Jean, CLSC, the City of Montreal, and some schools, the provincial government. Different people were there to discuss what was going on and what happened, why are these things happening. We came out with a good working document, and resources supposed to be put in place to implement some of these recommendations that came out of some of these discussion. Well, as we know, some of this was short-lived because the resources that was put on the table was short-term, temporary. So because they see the problem to them fixed to an extent, the resources was just removed. So obviously we go back to square one. But anyway, there's a number of things was put in place then, that, for instance, we touch on different things like police training, how the police use their gun. We also touch on orientation and having people from different cultural communities come to meet the police officer who is on the street, to discuss with them their concern and what our concerns are. And it helped to break down a lot of barriers. And there were articles in the newspaper that show that there's the improvement in the relationship with the police. Then we invited the police during that time also to a conference that was in the States, in Florida, for them to see what community policing is all about with community. And they have sent some top officers to see how this worked. I think about three or 4 years after that, that came the birth of community policing in Montreal. And since the community policing was put in place, most of the agenda that we discussed with the police was just put on the shelf, back burner. Until recently, say last year, the police seemed to have a zero tolerance in Courtenay with regards to people in Courtenay around Victoria and Mandela Park, that people was getting ticket for jaywalking street. People in the park was getting ticket for riding a bike on the grass. People were getting ticket for absolutely, they cannot understand the reason why they were getting tickets.
So sitting down too
people
long.
Was getting angry and the police could not handle the thing. We talked to them about the action and how could they be doing these things without even, at least let the people know that they are going to be doing these things so these people will know, because it's a community area, people are accustomed to crossing the street, going to the park and all the different things, and you just be giving people tickets like that. So they reached a point that they couldn't handle this situation because the youths were getting very angry and they started reacting in the park. And that's when, I guess, people was contacted. And we also contact the police station. And that's when they decided that they want to put in place a committee to work with them, to help them in making decisions before they do something like that again. And that's how the committee now is being put in place again with the different groups involved in Courtenay, sitting down to discuss what we discussed 15 years ago, to discussing it now again, to assist them how they should proceed in working with communities. We thought they would have learned then that this is how it was done. And I have all the documentation here. The documentation tells you exactly what was done and everything like that, what was developed, and that's some of the action plan that's there, and that is some of the same action plan that we'll be putting in place now for the police to use in before they carry out certain kind of work in the community. So I think they're beginning to understand now, because these are new people, because as Mr. Alexander said, there has been big turnovers in terms of police officers. They probably will be in the area for a year and then they move to somewhere else. So their need for orientation and discussion, so at least police officers can know the community that they're working in, meet some of the community, know who they are, what their cultures are, and all that is not happening. So there's an ongoing committee now that is in place, helping the police to, before they make decision like what they did last year, before they done that, so they could be warned and say, well, listen, this may not be the right way or the best way to do it. There probably is a better way to do it than how, the only way that you know how to do it. And I think that's where we are.
But one of the things we must try to do, we must try to understand that wherever we live, there are going to be, even within your family, there are going to be disagreement. You understand what I'm saying? We need the police to protect us. We need to be, but we don't want overzealous police that the minute they see you standing up, they want to tell you have to move on, keep on moving. As the young man was saying earlier on, the way we greet each other, we spar around and thing, and if police pass the thing, we're going to break into a fight. You know, if you just come to the area, you think, hey, these guys are going to fight, let's run out there. Go on, keep going. I tell a cop, why when on Sunday morning when a group of a Jews stand on Victoria around the corner talking, you don't go and tell them to keep on moving? Move on. Why every group of blacks stand and talking, you tell them to move? Why? You think they're going to burn on Montreal? What's going on with you? You know, but you have to tell them that so they begin to understand that you're noticing their behavior, and they have to change that behavior, because especially young people who were born here in particular, they're not going to put up with this type of behavior anymore, and something is going to touch and something's going to happen. And the last thing we want to see in the city again is a policeman draw his gun and shoot another young man in the city or young woman because he didn't understand or because they look alike and all this nonsense. It won't be accepted, and I won't want to be around for that flashpoint personally.
I just want to add one thing, because one of your point is about what happened at Mandela Park last year, last summer. And before the summer started, we have warned the police, we have warned the city councillors that if we don't have access to the facilities in the area for the young people to use, it will be a hot summer. And we have pointed out that because all the facilities was closed up. Every one of the facilities was closed. We have program to put in place, but we were not allowed to use the facility. Not only our community, other community could not have used the facility. So the young people has to hang out at the metro, had to hang out in Mandela Park, and then they've been harassed at the metro and at Mandela Park.
By the police.
So then, how do you expect, what are these youth are going to do during the summer? So we make sure that we bring these things up. And I think now they are trying to say, okay, let's work together now to prepare and plan for next summer to make sure that what happened last summer don't happen again for next summer.
But in regards to hanging out in Mandela Park, aren't parks there for people just to sit down and enjoy and just hang out? Because I was actually a witness of a very horrible act of brutality on August 6th at Nelson Mandela Park. And what had happened is me and my friend had went to dinner, and my friend lives in the neighborhood. I don't even live in the neighborhood. I live in Hochelaga Maisonneuve. So I said, oh, here's a park. Let's sit down. We were just talking. And there were two women police officers. I presume Quebecois, you know, they were white, and they spoke French, that started all of a sudden frisking and everything, going through the pockets of a young black male. I don't know what his age, maybe somewhere between 17 and 19, something like that. And I asked one of the police officers, you know, is this young man, is he under arrest? And she was you know, it's not your business, she was kind of saying. And he said, no, I'm not under arrest. And I says, well, then you don't have to be searched like this. You don't have to be searched. And right away, the other police officer on her little thing phones for backup. Next thing you know, there's about, within less than 5 minutes, I would say probably 3 to 4 minutes, there's a half a dozen vehicles there. One drives through the park. One of the police vans was swerving like this, trying to kind of like develop some kind of a, you know, the youth start running from everywhere because they want to see what's happening, but also there were adults there too, so they're trying to like antagonize things. Then I see the police van back up and then just go on the gas to a point where one black youth, if he didn't jump up on top of the hood, he would have been crushed. I was just like flabbergasted. And then I was backing away because it was getting so crazy. Then I went back again to see what was happening. There's three cops chasing a young man. They pepper sprayed him. They jumped on top of him. And I saw blood. And I saw at least him being hit at least three times with a flashlight. And that was, it all started around 8 p.m. on August 6th. So I don't know when these relationships and everything, but frankly, when I was sitting in the park before, there were families, there were people with their strollers. Some kids were hanging out, like you say, or, you know, young boys wrestling, you know, or just people having a fun day. And I don't see that there's really a problem with people hanging out in a park. They should be able to. If it's a it's a beautiful day, why not? So maybe there's other things in Nelson Mandela Park that I am not aware of because it is not my community and I do not know, but I just know that what I saw that day, and I was very upset and very shocked about it.
I want to add one thing. I know the police claim that there's a lot of complaint from neighbors in that area, and they also have a number of people who comes and use the young people to push drugs, which there's some truth to it. And we don't want that. And we know that they have to do their work. But when there are children in the park, and we have experienced police going to the park with guns pulled, and we have 150, 200 children in the park sometimes, I mean, it is scary. Because anything could happen. And we're talking about kids between the ages of 3 and 12 years old. using the park at some point. And we had to say, well, listen, this is not acceptable. I mean, it's like in a movie, you see police and robbers going at it. That's what they remind you of. And we had to complain several times about this kind of incident. But, I mean, the whole aspect of where the drugs are concerned, we are concerned that there are some people who are coming, they're using the young people to get involved in the drug trade. They see it as a way of making some money. And all that get caught up in the whole park where people go to sit down and just enjoy an evening or whatever the case may be. And that concern I share with the police, because they claim that there are a number of people around the young people who is pushing drugs. I mean, how that will be dealt with, I don't know. That's what they have to deal with, where the police is concerned.
And so here we have tonight day two of our community discussion, and we've invited Noel Alexander to join us from the Jamaican Association, as well as Michael Giddens from the Côte d'Ivoire Black Community Association. And both are here to provide their assessment of police relations within the community. After this musical break, we can come back to some of those issues. And you can join us here next Monday at Union United Church for these discussions on taking action on improving relations with communities of color here in Montreal. Today, we're talking about assessing the relationships within our community. And next week on Monday, the 24th, we'll be right here at Union United Church again between 6 and 9 p.m. to talk about taking action and implementing solutions. Day two, an assessment of relations with police in our community here today. And I just, before the break, invited Noel Alexander to take us back to 1991. And he's actually brought a document with him called Justice for the Poor. And I wonder if you can describe what justice for poor communities in Montreal has been like.
From what I have seen, from the discussion we've been having, there's no question to me that there has been a lot of improvement in the relationship with the police and the community. But as we've said before, the high turnover of police in this community and in these communities, and in particular Côte d'Ivoire, I forget offhand how many languages we have, but it's well over probably, I think it's 100 different ethnic groups in Côte d'Ivoire. And in anything you do, in your business ethics, in the police role, in the school, this is a very, very tedious district to work with. It takes a very special group of people and an understanding, and it takes staying power. You've got to stay in the community too. One of the things we complain about, and I said it, we had at Station 31 at the time, we had 400 plus police at Station 31, and not one of those police live anywhere near Côte d'Ivoire. They come in and work and leave. Now, when we talk about community policing, how are you going to understand community policing if you don't understand the community which you're serving? You come to work, you put on your uniform, you drive down the street, and you drive back to the station. No, you don't touch community policing at all. You don't go to the church that these people go to, you've never visited. The only time maybe a person see you is when you go to commit an arrest or something like that. You're supposed to be involved in the sports, basketball or something, or be around, not to be arresting people, but be participating. Maybe you're running a group. Well, the cops, young police could be running a group, but seriously mean I want to train some kids because I'm a good football or a good hockey player, so I want someone to play hockey or something. And I think the more respect would develop. But for me, I think there has been a tremendous improvement with the relationship between police and the community. And if we could retain police officers much longer, probably special incentive or whatever, so they can stay at that station or in that district, maybe we could bring them around and use them as model to send probably to Toronto or other parts of Montreal, because we let them know certain things were unacceptable. The story that I heard about Mandela Park, that really struck me though, because I thought that we had passed that stage. I hear the odd occasion of police will do something. I've never heard it so explicit. To go back to what we've seen, like in different manuals and people writing concerning districts, I think one of the problems with Côte d'Ivoire is that a lot of the people in Côte d'Ivoire are poor people. Poverty brings out a lot of things in a lot of situation develops. And because of the poverty situation and the lack of, for argument's sake, let's say sporting facilities, proper programs addressed and well-financed so that we get the best and volunteers to help kids, then we're going to continue to a certain extent to see some of these things happening. We need to, we did a project, as Michael said. We had all the ingredients. We had the people at the table. We had the recommendations. We began by asking for a police liaison. We had sort of a social worker, qualified person, in each police station. They, in turn, would, when an interrogation was taking place with a youngster or someone from the black community, because of cultural differences, that liaison person didn't have to say anything. They would sit there and listen to what was going on. No punching and beating up. You talking to a kid and let the kid talk. That person, because of their background, quickly read, she or he's telling the truth. Because we know, you know, to a certain extent of your study, your life experiences, yes, this is coming across. We got that program because of finance. We lost that work. That work no longer we don't have. We're asking for that to go back again. In all of these communities, that all these police stations have a liaison from the community in there. Filipino person should be liaison with the station. Bangladesh should have a liaison because these people have police in them that don't know them. We also, and you know that, we have, out of all this that took place in 91 coming up, we had the Ethics Commission. People believe that they shouldn't use it. I suggest to people that you should, when something happens, go to the police station and get that form and write it up. Whatever took place, it might take time, but the Police Ethics Commission worked. It worked because, I don't know if you know the recent thing the other day where police has been suspended. It works because system inside it that says it has to work. It's not a work that's good because, you know, Marlene Jennings was one of the first black person to hold that kind of position there. And I don't know who has replaced her, but I do believe that we should continue to use it. If it's not working, let us get together and have a revision, because when you put something in place, we should be able to go back and evaluate what takes place, how many cases come through here. Well, I don't think anybody, we have a machinery in our community that examine how these things are working. Similarly, we have with, like the tribunal does with human rights, you know, a lot of racial discrimination and what takes place. But who is there to police to make sure that these things are happening when it happens, and what are the results? Some people might get a report that the human rights looked at 400 cases, they fined for 2 or 100, and so on and so forth. So we need to do a lot of work. And it can be done on one set of people. People got to be alert and get intelligent to know that the system is there for everybody. And there are checks and balances within the system. Used properly and pay attention. I think that we will get some tremendous results. And I go back to the thing about parenting. I think of the parents of children have a big responsibility, and they must make sure they know what's going on in the schools. They want to make sure that they know the teachers in the school, get on these school boards and ensure that at least they're participating in their kids' life, because they're the future. And if you don't pay attention to the children, who's supposed to do it? Not the police. That's the last thing that you want to have in your house, police telling you what to do your kid. You're supposed to take care of your kid, you know what I mean? And so I think that, as Michael is saying, we have to wake up. We have a lot of work to do. We can complain as much as you like, but I think that we have certain structures in place that if we work with the structures and work with the people and encourage them instead of beating them down, we can get terrific results.
I just wanted to ask you one question. Do you think that the community itself has a... With the lack of confidence in the police force, also have a lack of confidence or don't have a proper knowledge on how to use their community, the certain community centers that are out there?
I would honestly yes. I think a lot of organizations are not sort of, you know, probably put them your flyers around, or I don't know the best way to reach a community. We, apart from CKUT, as you know, and I used to object to this, it's only when an incident in the black community, say the television people come and push a microphone in your face. They want to hear from you or Don Philip or somebody in the black community. And I'm tired of that. You know, I believe there should be a program just like you have in the United States where black speaks. I'm not talking some hide-and-seek radio station or television station. Where on a Sunday or something like that, people from the youth, the elders could sit down and say, talk about what's going on, how the school system affecting them, how this affecting them. And not, we don't, we should be proactive talking about issues, and so that whoever turned their sets on, white or black, would be listening. We talk about Black History Month. Black History Month, we comes out and we do a lot of stuff, and then we go home. Black history is every day of our life, not a month. But we seem to, one month we come out and we do a lot of stuff and we go back home. What's all this? We need to be amplifying our needs. But you need, yes, I honestly said I do not think people know exactly what the Black Community Organization does. To a certain extent, some of them don't even know. And a lot of assertions are made, and a lot of disrespect goes on around the place. And I think we need to cut that out. We need to pay attention. We need to make the history, like the death of these people. And I noticed that not a lot of attention has been paid to Kelly, who was murdered in a mountain site. And a hell of a meeting took place after that murder. And I would want to say that's a funny thing. Michael was there. We called a meeting and the citizens of Mountainside because this man was killed. We went to Ruby Foos. We had the school. We had the police. We had everybody there. The first 10 minutes, the question of police came up. But you'd be surprised. For the other 50 minutes of the meeting, it was about poverty, unemployment, place to play, and housing. Not another word was spoken about the police. Because I'm telling you, the people put a mattress out in the summer, and next summer it is still there, rotting. Nobody clear it up. The park behind the Lassavan Park, the little shack they have there, where's the shack? There was no baseball diamond. The grass never cut. Where are these kids supposed to play? So it's not a police thing. Where was the city councillor? What's the city was doing for the people that lives there? The house that had the toilets didn't work. Nothing worked. You know who owned the building? The Bank of Montreal, something like one of these banks. We forced the city within 2 weeks to bring the health people in, pronounce the building unsafe and unhealthy to live in, took the building away, renovate the building, and now it's a co-op housing. So, you see, because of a death of something, sometimes something happened. Well, we shouldn't have to take death before we start to pay attention to our community.
Okay, let me start by going back to the police and the relationship, and then we will pick up from there. In 1988, after the shooting death of, I think was Anthony Griffith, a number of our community wrote a number of briefs to the Human Rights Commission for the Task Force on Race. With regards to the police. I have here a copy of a brief that was written by a number of youth groups and other organizations. So we have always encouraged the community to participate in the process, because by not participating, then how else are we going to get results when these things happen? Okay, so even though sometimes by participating, a lot of people sometimes are angry of the black community participating, but as a responsible community, you have to take part in these processes to make sure that justice at least is done, or try to get justice. So our role in, we talk more in Côte d'Age because Ms. Alexander and myself, we work in Côte d'Age, and we have an organizations that we continue to work not only with the police. We have worked with all the institutions and the representatives of all level of government to make sure that they do their job. The MP, MNA, city councillors, because they all have a role to play when things happen. And we make sure we call them and we put them on the spot. And those are things that we have been doing over the last 10, 15, 20 years. I'm sure Mr. Alexander could attest to that. Because these are things, and you have to understand, it's important to do these things. In Cotonage, it's a very multicultural community. You have close to 100 or more people from different cultures. And a lot of them are recent immigrants, and sometimes a lot of them do not know the laws of the land and regulation, and they're easily exploited by landlords, by institution, education institution, just name it. So there's a lot of education needs to be done in the area. Mr. Alexander talked about the apartments and the kind of problem and what the city had to do by taking over some of these buildings to make sure that people have a decent place to live, that they're paying rent. So these things are important when you work within a community. So you're not just working on one issue, you're working on an issue of community development to foster a better place to live for the whole community. So we participate at a lot of different levels. However, I am concerned more for what is happening to some of our young people. I want to go back by stating for the last 10, 15 years, there have been an overrepresentation of our youths in the social service system. And that is a great concern for us, because you know what happened after they leave there. We know what happened, and that's where we start to lose our young people, because and the system have not been able to produce the result for our families and young people, because we just had a report less than 5 years ago, and it stated that nothing have changed from one result to the other. It shows that over 22% of black youths are in the social service system. We also are concerned about the increased dropout rate. And let's understand the causes of these. We have to find answer for some of these things, because you know, I don't know what the future is going to be like for some of these young people if we don't find answer for some of these questions.
Day 3 is coming up on Monday the 24th, and hopefully we can get to asking some of the questions that bring about answers that challenge a lot of the situations that you describe. The panels that we're hosting, the days that we're hosting, are primarily looking at police relations within communities of color. But obviously, when you start talking about relations between one group, you bring up, you know, a multitude of relations, and so it is complex, and that's why we appreciate that you've taken the time to join us here, and that's why we're taking the time to broadcast 3 hours and host 3 days of these types of discussions, all happening right here at Union United Church. The last one happening on Monday the 24th, day 3, taking action on improving police relations with communities of color. And Union United Church is located at 3007 De Lille, near Lionel Gru Metro. If you'd like to participate, you can give us a call at 398-6787, extension 2593. Today we're joined by Noel Alexander from the Jamaica Association, as well as Michael Giddens from the Côte de Neige Black Community Association. We'll be back in just a minute and take some more questions from folks that have gathered here tonight. Thank you. started talking about Côte de Neige and have pretty much focused on that. But I think since you're coming from Saint-Michel, maybe you can talk about the difference in the experience there, because at least in Côte de Neige, both Michael and Noah painted a pretty thorough example of one of the recurring problems that people are having with police is coming down to culture. And I wonder if you can maybe contrast or at least talk more in detail about the kinds of relations that exist between police and, say, the Haitian community around Saint-Michel or Montreal North. And maybe we can have the response of Noel and Michael here, just by contrast there.
Just to say that what I know is that a situation is that we would assume that because the Haitians are considered Francophones, the situation could be like a bit better or something. But in the end, it's not necessarily better, and we could even see it in like in the school results where they have problems in French. You know, like this is like sort of kind of ridiculous in a way, but it's like their results are bad because they are assumed to be Francophone when they are not, because it's like, I would say more like they speak Creole at home first. So, and one of the problems they have is that they mix French and Creole all the time. So that just that gives them problems at school, and it gives them problems like even around, like in the area. So starting from there, problems at school, of course, it can lead to many other problems, like we talked about relations with the police and stuff. But from what I know, with the, like, that's where, like, you know, like gangs started, like not necessarily in Saint-Michel, but it went there also. So the relation with the police there is like, it's quite, I would say, in a, how can I say, a very harsh, I can't find a way to put it, but it's like the relationship is really bad. It's like, it's not good. And we would think that, you know, it gets better over the years, even though they hired Haitian police officers and they work in the area. You would think the situation is getting better, but it's not necessarily because the Haitian officers don't, you know, make it better. It's just that, you know, it's not about the Haitian officers. It's about the white officers that, you know, that deals with the community there. So it's basically like a situation that, how can I say, that needs to be revised, or should I say, or a situation that needs to be worked upon, because when I look about the situation where, like I said, the youth forming gangs there, you know, they are seen as, okay, they are seen as forming gangs, even like just one or two, three or four guys hanging together, and they're called a gang. And this is like, the police is going to crack down on them, like just for the sheer fact that they're together, they're black, there might be a gang. You know, they might be dressed the same way, they might, you know, have like a scarf the same color and stuff like that. It's like you that are, you know, trying to find something to sort of identify themselves with. And then just because of that, they're cracked down upon. And this brings to, you know, it can bring to them really getting into a gang. Like, you know, they'll feel like, you know, at least if I'm going to get harassed by police, then, you know, let's get harassed for something. So this is like, how can I say, like a very brief, like, picture of, you know, the situation in Saint-Michel, you know, or even Montréal.
Personally, I'm a little bit shocked.
why are you shocked?
Because, you see, we were under the impression they speak French. So, yes, I mean, you know, the police will, when they start to be like, we'll come in our committee and say, Mouji nigga, what have you, and some of the kids don't understand what they're talking about. They know what's going on, because I said they have more people in the police force than we have in the English-speaking community. They even have a high-ranking police officer who's a Haitian. Probably the highest-ranking black police in Quebec is a Haitian gentleman. And I thought that probably that type of thing would, I mean, give them a chance to say, well, hey, one of us are there, so, I mean, you know. But we don't really have anybody from the English-speaking community at that level. So we just feel like we're out of it anyway. And I don't think we'd look graciously at any... We had one black girl who was in the police force, and she's out. And I don't think we really believe. Because when Anthony Griffin got shot, there was a Haitian police at station 20... What was it now? Anyway, he was at that same police station. And the way the white police officer terrorized a guy, he became a nervous wreck. He had to quit. Because they really got after him, you know, because he must have said, maybe you shouldn't have done that. Oh, that was the last thing. But, you know, it was well kept because, you know, they have the brotherhood and the union, but they pressured this guy and he shook, got out.
I just want to clarify one thing before I say anything more, in that even though some of the organizations in the Côte Nord were able to establish better relationship with the police, it does not mean that the relationship with the youth is the same. I want to make that perfectly clear. I mean, I also want to say that the police department know that they have to deal with certain organizations within the area, and they will do what they have to do to provide answers, whatever have you, to justify whatever their police officer have done in the area. So they will probably make sure that they function in a certain way because we are going to be on them a bit more often. But the relationship with black youth and the police in Côte d'Ivoire is not any different than the police relationship between black youth and the police in Montreal North or anywhere else. I just want to make that clear. I also want to say that as I mentioned before, that we have a lot of work to do. We run a lot of programs for youths. We have tried to run a lot of programs for parents to get involved in parenting and develop different skills. And we have a hard time getting parents out. And, you know, I don't know what next we have to do, but we have to find a way of getting parents involved. As the other speakers say that, parents has to get involved. There is no other choice. We have situation in some of our program that parents calls the center to ask workers to discipline or to talk to their children because the kids don't listen to them. Those are some of the kind of situations that we are experiencing because some of these youths have developed certain kind of relationship with the workers and respect that they will listen to them, but not necessarily listen to the parents. So, you know, there's work to be done to get some of our youth to understand their parents' role, even though they may not be able to verbalize certain things. But you have to understand the role that they are playing, providing food, shelter, clothing, whatever. And we just have to work harder as a community and work together and share resources to get our young people to a point that these harassment by police and other things hopefully will not be there because they will be occupied doing constructive things. I guess that's wishful thinking. I hope it's not wishful thinking, but that's what I would like to see. But parents have to get off the butt and get involved. Instead of watching TV on evenings, get to one the center, be involved, go to their children, sports games, you know what program your child is involved in. Some of them don't even know the name of the school that their child goes to. That's how bad it is at some point. That they will leave and go to parties and dances and the kids are left home alone. So we have to know what our priorities are, especially in a society like the one that we're living in. In the Caribbean, you may have aunts, uncle, different
extended family to take care of these children. But it's not so here. Mm-hmm. As the old African proverb says, take a village to raise a child. And in this society, it probably takes more than a village to raise a child. So if we are going to save some of our young people, especially our male, we have to find a way of walking together and get them off the street, get them to stop hanging on the street. We are seeing the same experience in Toronto now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know? And the youths are killing each other, so the police don't have to do that kind of work anymore because they're killing themselves. You know? And we have to do something. Because how are they going to be productive members of the society? We live in a highly high-tech society. What role are they going to play? So these are concerns that we have as a community. So that's the reason why we are saying that parents have to get involved and understand what this means for the future of their offspring.
It seems like a lot of the advice that Noel and Michael have given as well tonight, or a lot of the message has been sort of pushed towards the community, which I think comes out of the work that you do. Michael Giddens coming from the Cote de Neige Black Community Association, Noel Alexander coming from the Jamaica Association. But I want to bring the discussion back to the police. It would be great if we did have officers here tonight from Precinct 24 and 25 to be able to hear the kinds of discussion that's happening here, because it's very important, I think, to alert the police to the sort of issues that communities are dealing with, so when they come into those communities, they're not starting from scratch, you know, to try to diffuse any sort of situation. It seems like, Noel, with the text that you brought there, Justice and the Poor, there's this argument made that the police are more, have a bigger presence in poor communities. And that community is Cote de Neige. We have other communities in Montreal, poor communities, where, yeah, police presence is very high, and it's not like that in Westmount or Outremont or other places. But to bring this question and these kinds of concerns that you've outlined for the community to consider, to bring it back to the police, I know that both you, Michael, and Noel have dealt with the police in the past, and you've given them advice. But from this forum, and yeah, we did extend the invitation to the police, we did invite them to come, neither 24, 25, or 26 accepted our invitation, even though they have community liaison officers who sort of have a mandate to do this type of stuff, to attend community forums. Even though they're not here, you know, perhaps they'll be listening to CKUT 90.3 when they hear your words. But what kind of advice would you give to them, considering all of the conditions and context that you've outlined, given the situation in Cote de Neige, and even hearing about other communities in Montreal and then the situation there, the relationships that exist between police and the business community and police and youth or police and our families?
My advice is always will be to the police is that I know they try to do it, to bring in certain type of education within the system. I don't say you have to be a police officer, but I think they should have more cultural sensitive training in the police force before they come to the street. And if you're going to work in place like Cote de Neige, and if you're going to work up north with the Haitian community, I think some people from the Haitian community should be at the police technology, telling them, listen, if you want to go to this district, you should take an exam to go there. If you want to go there, you tell us what you know about these Asian people that you're going to be police for. How do they eat? How do they dance? You should know something about it. You can't just be a police and go anywhere and do anything. As I said, all the officers seem to be able to grasp what we're saying, Michael. You talk with them and it's like, but when you come to the younger one, you're overzealous. It's like they want to prove that you're a police officer. You don't have to prove you're a police, you're a police. No, behave like a police officer. You don't go call names at people. You know, niggas go home and get off the street, you black. You don't talk to people like that. I don't care what you have on. So my message to the police is that you have to maintain a certain amount of training. You have to allow people to understand that you are their peace officer first. That's what you are, a peace officer to enforce the law. But not going out to make problems so that you have to make peace. You shouldn't be making problems so we can make peace. You should be a peace officer and say, come on, guys, go home, break it up. Don't go there and drawing the stuff ready to shoot or to kill, because you might shoot. And so I go back to saying that I believe the training of our police officers for a special district that they're going in, we should ensure that from the director down, know exactly the district they're going in, what is expected of them, so that we, the community organization, shouldn't have to continue saying, don't do this. They're not kids. They train people with salaries. They should know how to behave. We need to make sure the police who are serving us are fit and well and ready to come and do their work and not in fear. So I believe a lot of it is fear. When some of the killings that went on before, I said it was out of fear. There's still a fear of the black community. Trust me.
The role of police director is important to how some of its officers function. From experience, we have lieutenant and police director who wanted to make a difference, and it reflect in how the officers function in that station. I'm talking about Station 31, the old Station 31. I think there was a Luluzon over there at one point. And these guys say, well, listen, and we are present at some of the meeting, this is what I expect of you as police officers, to be police officers for all citizens of Courtney Age. And this is how I want you to carry out your job, you know. And the police officer will listen when you have those kind of directive from your director, because it's who makes your recommendation, whether or not you get promoted or not. And these things is important to everybody in the society. So I would say that it's important that the role that the director play, you know, in how the police officer function in one station to another. I mean, there's a general training that everyone goes through, but you never stop learning after you finish that training. You have to always be your supervisors. So that's important. The training that community police officer gets is not the same training that the one who's on the street gets. And that is disturbing, because I mean, I believe, or we believe, that all the police officers should get that same training that the police officer who does the community liaison gets, because they get training how to deal with people. And police work is all about dealing with people. You know? So it's important that the police department understand it, because some police officers have made comments to say that police officer who do community policing is not real police. That has been commented made by a police officer who's on the street. They're not real police. Well, what does that mean? Because they function in a different way with communities from different culture. You know, police officers need to give basic respect to all the citizens and to show people that they're there for everyone. And they will get the respect once they do that. And once the approach is aggressive, and then people will respond in the same way. Because all of us, I'm pretty sure, had police officers who had approached you in different way. And the one who have approached you in a very respectful way, you deal with them in a different way. So these things are important to any community, not only the black community. And I think the police department and the police officer have to understand that these things is important. Give respect and you'll get respect.
I just want to thank everybody for participating tonight and for making it down here. And again, I want to extend the invitation for next Monday to continue these discussions. Tonight we've heard from Noel Alexander with the Jamaica Association, as well as Michael Giddens with the Côte d'Ivoire Black Community Association, and even Adelin had a few words to share from Black Youth in Action. Day 3 is taking place right here at Union United Church again, Monday, February 24th. It's the last day for these discussions, No Justice, No Equality, No Peace, Police Relations with Communities of Color, 3-day forum on Montreal's youth, community leaders, and police. Day 3 is taking a look at action and implementing solutions on improving police relations with communities of color. Doors open here at Union United Church between 6 and 9 p.m., and Union United is located at 3007 De Lille, near Lille Nelgrue Metro. If you need any information about these panels, if you'd like copies, they are being distributed as part of CKUT's long-term memory radio project. You can reach the news department by dialing 398-6787 extension 2593. Or you can email news@ckut.ca.
We view each other with a great love and a great understanding, and that we try to extend this to the general black population and also people, oppressed people all over the world. And I think that we differ from some other groups simply because we understand the system better than most groups understand the system. And with this realization, we attempt to form a strong political base based in the community with the only strength that we have, and that's the strength of a potentially destructive force if we don't get freedom.